All right, back again for the wing portion of What Makes a Breakout. 2 times in 3 days, that's got to be a record for me, even after I said, I don't know if I'll ever record again. I'm also a completionist, and I can't, I don't know, I feel like I at least need to finish this. So let's see. I have a couple corrections to make. First, I had originally had Quentin Grimes in the wing group. After thinking about it a little bit more, I thought it made more sense to move him up to the guard group. He would have did fall in the rotation comparison group. This was the group that I talked about last time with Jalen Suggs and Gabe Vincent and his teammate Emmanuel Quickley, Bones Highland, Cam Thomas, etc. Long story short, I just didn't see Quentin Grimes as a candidate for a large breakout. He started and played the most minutes among all of those people in that group, and also had the lowest usage, the lowest paint attempt rate, the lowest self-created rate. It's just not a candidate for what we're looking for. I mean, I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's a strong candidate for a large breakout from his role last season. Now, on the topic of the episode the other day, Nathaniel brought to my attention that I seem to just gloss over the parts of Tyrese Maxey's statistical profile that were not in line with the kind of breakouts we see from players at his level. And that level is like moving from that fringe all-star to all-star level of impact. And again, just a reminder, I'm not actually looking at when did this player make the all-star team. I'm actually looking at their statistics to try to just sort of group them and labeled it fringe all-star or leader and level and all-star. So I took a look at my notes and the data, and I think he's probably right. So Maxey's distribution and self-creation were certainly not at the level of those historical counterparts. So I was projecting, which I try not to do too much, but I was projecting that Harden's removal from that team meant that Tyrese Maxey would be asked to do more, and I assumed that he would still get to those levels of that next group. So I still have him in that group, and still have him near the top of that group as far as being a strong candidate to make that ascension to the next level, to that kind of all-star level. And there is a lot of support in the data for that, but I'm also using my own opinion to support that feeling. So nothing has changed in terms of the way I would rate him, but maybe more so with Maxey than with others. I'm willing to insert my own feelings into my own judgment. It's crazy, huh? So now, I also mentioned last episode that I had 4 position groups. With the help of Nathaniel and John, I consolidated this into 3 groups. So guards, which I did yesterday, wings, and bigs. It's still a little bit hard to define. And I mentioned yesterday too, I'm trying not to have very rigid rules about what goes where. I'm trying to just group similar players at similar levels and compare them that way, rather than being, like I said, extremely rigid about it's got to be 14 points per game. And if it's 13.9, then he's at the level below. But generally, the way I would define wings and bigs is certainly any small forward who could passably play as a 2 or defend 2s is pretty easily categorized as a wing. All true centers are pretty easily categorized as a big, as well as pretty much all bigs that you don't want defending on the perimeter. I'm also considering a big. Now, not every player really fits that description perfectly. Some of the players we'll talk about today are more 3s and maybe 2s, and some of them are more of a true kind of power forward type. And it's a little difficult, right? And it may vary team to team, right? A player who is a power forward on one team might play the 3 on another. So I'm doing my best to kind of group similar players. It's not perfect. It's pretty close. I spent 30 minutes last episode talking about the methodology. If you haven't listened to at least the first part of that, I'd recommend checking it out. I'm not going to go over all of it again. I probably will reiterate some stuff as I go, mostly because I can't help it. I have this need to feel like I'm being extremely clear, which also can make me a little bit verbose and sometimes go over the same thing over and over, but here we are. Another thing I might mention is I think in common parlance, we think of a breakout as like sort of coming out of nowhere or a significant step up that was somewhat unforeseen. That isn't exactly what this is. I have the ability and the data to limit the scope to only really large breakouts, like from like Markkanen's 15 points to 24, right? That's a big jump. Maybe I'll do that too. In this exercise, a breakout might be better thought of as simply taking their game to the next level. And I would also say too, you know, I eyeballed a lot of these to identify like, was this a breakout season? Extremely steady improvements, right? From 16 to 18 to 20 points a game, those kinds of things. I'm not calling that a breakout. Normally I'm looking for a noticeable increase beyond any level that they were at previously. So, you know, 20 to 24 points, that's noticeable, right? It's a 20% increase in scoring output. That's in there. Now, I didn't draw a line and said it has to be at least 20% because, again, I think that's too rigid. So it's pretty subjective on what a breakout is, but it's not like all of these players are coming out of nowhere. You might think of it better as taking their game to the next level. All right, so let's get into it. One high-level observation that is just that more of these kind of breakouts came from guards. So I actually have fewer wings than guards in my historical comparisons and in the number of current year candidates that I'm looking at today. And it's going to be the same for bigs when I look at that soon. There is a lot of good and interesting stuff in here though. And I also wanted to say too, one of the ways I didn't mention this yet last time, but how I came up with my list of players that are potential breakouts for this season. I totally forgot to mention this. And it's similar to what I mentioned above or earlier. I just eyeballed each roster and picked at least one player, sometimes as many as four or five, like in the case of the Magic, for instance, and got to work. So if, you know, if I missed someone that you wanted to hear about or something, like, let me know. I'm also generally limiting it to players who have played five or six seasons or so or less. So, you know, I'm not looking at a 9-year veteran and saying, is he likely to break out? Okay. So with wings, like there's only three wings that were in a bench role last year that I'm looking at today. This is like the lowest level, the lowest cohort that I'm looking at to see if they can move from that bench role to maybe a starter level's impact or above. And again, like bench is loosely defined as like roughly less than 9 points a game and often less than 20 or so minutes per game. The three or four actually that I'm looking at today are Yuta Watanabe, John Conchar, Jalen Johnson, and Moses Moody. Even with this small group of players, you can kind of see what I mean in the sense that they are very different players and player types. Conchar is probably more of a small forward shooting guard who sometimes oddly plays like a power forward. And Jalen Johnson is really probably more of a true power forward type who, you know, depending on the situation, could possibly play the three, but probably not the five, right? And Moses Moody may actually be better classified as a shooting guard who plays up to the three, but here we go. Historically, there's only a couple guys that I have in my data set. I'm sure that there's more that I missed, but it's, you know, it's kind of hard to find. I also talked about last time too, that, you know, these bench roles, none of your high profile players like really, really ever are ever in them. So the pool of candidates is a lot smaller and also just frankly less interesting. The two guys I'm looking at historically are Norman Powell and Gary Trent Jr. They scored about 9 points per game in the season before their level up. They got up 12 shots, or a little over 12 shots per 36 minutes, and scored 50% of their twos off the dribble, but only 10% of their threes. And that 50% to 10, 50% self-creation and 10% self-created threes is pretty indicative also of this wing category. So those two guys, Powell and Trent, also didn't get to the free throw line at all and scored pretty efficiently from two and three in the season that they were in this bench role that I've defined. So I'll go pretty quickly through these guys. Yuta, I think he's pretty fun to watch. He's got energy and excitement, and he has a really nice left-handed shooting stroke. For this analysis, though, he just doesn't and never really has had the kind of usage that we would want to see. So even if his role and playing time increased, especially on that team in Phoenix, I don't see any way that he improves significantly to the level that we're talking about him as some kind of big breakout this year. John Conchar, it's weird. I mentioned it already. I kind of think of him as more of like a shooting guard who kind of plays like a power forward in some ways. In this exercise, though, his usage was even lower than Yuta's at only 10%, so he's out. Now, Jalen Johnson, this one's worth going over. I've talked about Jalen Johnson as early as like my second episode ever, and that I was a believer in him, despite not having much of a reason to do so, especially throughout his rookie season. But here he is, and he's playing well, or at least playing efficiently, and has been through last season. although he wasn't getting a ton of minutes. So he was, his usage last season is decent at this sort of lower level. So 16% usage, 11 field goals per 36, field goal attempts per 36. His rebound rate is the best among all of these wings, not just this level, but all of these wings, which makes sense as, again, he's probably more of a true power forward than most of the guys that we're going to be reviewing today. There's a couple of exceptions maybe, but especially in the historical group, but especially for all of the 2023 breakout candidates, definitely highest rebound rate. Despite that though, he actually has decent off the dribble creation inside the arc. So from two at 38% of his two point field goals coming off the dribble or in ISO, where he's highly efficient at 59%. He draws fouls well with a 24% free throw rate. His big deficiency in last season is that he took about a third of his shots from three, where he made less than 30%. Now that 30% number is actually an improvement from the season before. So hasn't been a strong start to his career in terms of shooting from deep. But last episode I said, especially at these lower levels, opportunity is actually definitely like the biggest factor in identifying a potential breakout. The Hawks cleared a path for him this summer. I don't see any reason why he won't end up in that starter group with the potential for continued future growth. So in this group of four players, I actually like Jalen Johnson as a potential breakout. Now, that doesn't mean that he's going to be at that all-star level, but going from, you know, 14, 15 minutes a game to starting and 25 minutes a game or so is going to have a major impact on his output and potentially the way we see him going forward. Moses Moody, I do kind of like Moses Moody. And again, you know, maybe he's better classified as a guard, but I think he also plays up quite a bit, especially on that team. So from what I've seen, he seems to make pretty good basketball plays. Like, seems pretty aware. And I admittedly haven't watched him a ton, partially because he barely played last season until the playoffs. With that said, his usage was low when he did play. His three-point attempt rate is almost too high at nearly 60%. So 60% of his attempts came from three. He did shoot it decently at 36%. But he does very little off the dribble or an ISO, really more of a catch and shoot player at this point. And so I'm not considering him as a strong candidate for a breakout this season. Moving to the players who are more in a rotation role. So generally think of this as like your eighth guy. Sometimes they'll make spot starts, probably scoring somewhere 9 to 14 points per game over the season, etc. Historically, this is a really strong group of wings who had a period where they were in a rotation role and grew their game to a starter or even a leader role. Those names, the comparison group that I'll be comparing this group against, are Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Chris Middleton, Giannis, Aaron Gordon, OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, Jimmy Butler, Jeremy Grant, Jaylen Brown. I mean, that's a crazy group. A quick note real quick on Giannis. He is the only player in this entire exercise, historical or current, where I cross position groups for. I have him as a wing for his first four seasons, and then I count him as a big for every season after that. And if you go and look at his stats, and Basketball Reference has this position estimate where they kind of estimate what position they were playing on the court and stuff. You know, especially in his first couple seasons, he was sometimes employed almost as a shooting guard or a small forward, definitely a small forward. So I have him in a wing as a wing for his first four seasons, a big every season after that. So in the season before these guys took their game to that starter or leader level, they had about 12 points per game on about 18% usage. Assist, turnover, and rebound rates were all around 10-11%. Half of their shots came from the paint. About a third came from three. They self-created about 40% of their twos, but only 6 or 7% of their threes. So still, we're talking a lot of, from three, it's a lot of catch and shoot, not a lot of off the dribble threes, which makes sense. Most wings don't do that. Got to the free throw line at a high rate. So that's a pretty elite group of players, even at that time, if they weren't elite then. One thing that's been pretty consistent, not just in this analysis, but almost all analysis, is for players to get to, or to have the potential to really get to that next level or high, all-star type level, getting to the free throw line is almost a must. Now, these guys didn't score inefficiently, but they weren't really crazy efficient either. 53% from two is not great. 34% from three is not great. 57% true shooting is fine, especially for a young player. I mean, it's not terrible. It's not great. All right, so the candidate pool. This group unfortunately ended up a little more bleak than I was expecting. Once I saw this historical group, which was the first part of the data I put together, I got pretty excited. Some of it may be because these players the players with the potential that Paul George had or Giannis had when he was coming in, or even Jaylen Brown had, they're just getting more opportunity. Most of them are just getting more opportunities earlier in their career these days than they were even 4 or 5 and definitely 7, 8, 10 years ago. Terrence Mann, Moses Moody, Josh Green, Denny Avdia, Herb Jones, Jonathan Kuminga, Patrick Williams, Rui Hachimura. Right, so not a lot to be excited about in that group. Some interesting players, some guys that I think a lot of us like. But yeah, let's get into it. So Terrence Mann, 9 points per game on 10 field goal attempts per 36 and 15% usage. He had the highest assist rate in this pool of candidates at about 14% and sort of middling turnover and rebound rates. Half of his attempts came from the paint, 38% from three. It's pretty similar to that historical group. Free throw rate is a little bit low, not detrimental, 22%. Definitely lower than that historical group, though. His self-creation rate, Terrence Mann, we're talking about, self-creation rate is really good, right in line with that historical group. I know last year they had this like Terrence Mann as point guard experimental lineups that might have had something to do with it. And also that he, in comparison to some of these other guys, probably functions as more of a guard more often than some of these other folks. So, you know, if you want to call him a guard, that's fine. It'd be hard to really argue against it, but you know, I'm not calling Zion a guard because he was point Zion for a month. Efficiency-wise, Terrence Mann was strong. 62% true shooting. He improved his efficiency significantly from the season before. The Clippers clearly value him, and his metrics are mostly in line with this group. It's unfortunately for him, it's hard to see that usage and opportunity growing beyond what it was last year with this current group of Clippers. I see the appeal in Terrence Mann. I don't consider him a strong candidate for a breakout. Josh Green, as a Mavs fan, I love Josh Green. He's got energy, vision, athleticism. He has some flaws too, so let's take a look. From a scoring and usage perspective, similar to Terrence Mann, 9 points per game on about 15% usage. That's nine for him. That's 9 field goal attempts per 36. That's understandable on a team with Luka and Kyrie. It's not where we really want it to be for the purpose of this analysis. Now, his assists and turnovers, I can tell you from watching him, he actually has good court vision and distribution, but he's not really asked to create much. And especially last season, the Mavs, you know, have a slow pace. They don't run a lot, so he's not doing a lot in fast break or hasn't been able to or allowed to. This is one of the few areas where I can like speak with confidence about what I see on the court, having watched him a ton. His 10% assist rate is not great. I mean, it's okay, but it's not great. He does have a 15% turnover rate, which is high, and only a 7% rebound rate. So on a team that needs rebounding help, it's not great that he's not there. I'm going to say this again, I'm sure, but you know, I'm not putting a whole lot of stock into rebound rate when I'm trying to figure out who's going to break out. I didn't look at it at all for guards. I am looking at it for wings and definitely bigs, but it's not going to play a huge role in the analysis. Like Dorian Finney-Smith before him, he's a pretty good offensive rebounder, but overall isn't really helping on the boards. Is definitely not like this historical group did. Scoring profile, 92% of his shots are coming from the paint or from three. That's pretty evenly split at 48% from the paint, 44% of his shots from three. So very few long twos and mid-rangers. He gets to the free throw line pretty well at 25%. That's a 7 percentage point improvement from the season before. That's good. Self-creation, though, is low, nearly the lowest in this group that I'm going to be evaluating at this rotational level. My eye test tells me that this is because he gets a majority of his twos off of cuts to the basket, fast breaks when they do actually run, and putbacks. So otherwise, he's mostly hanging out on the corner in offense. Efficiency-wise, he was highly efficient from two, 64% field goal percentage from two. That's great. Given what I said about getting most of his points off of cuts, fast breaks and putbacks, I mean, that makes sense. 40% of his 40% three-point rate was a huge improvement over where he was early in his career. His volume isn't that high, but at least knocking it down at a high percentage is great. So as far as a candidate for a breakout, I'm a fan. He's fun to have on your team when he's active and engaged. Some nights he kind of disappears, and while I do have some homer optimism for this Mavericks team, I have a hard time seeing Josh get the kind of opportunity and usage necessary to be a strong candidate for a breakout this season. Denny Avdia, I can make this one really short. He has some things that he does really well and that are good markers for a breakout. He's good on the ball with a decent assist rate. Free throw rate is high. Self-creation rate is pretty high. His efficiency from two and three are basically the lowest among all of his peers in this candidate group. Less than 30% from three, that's the worst. 53% true shooting, that's the worst. 53% shooting from two is only better and only marginally better than Patrick Williams among this group. So is not only is his usage or his efficiency not as good as we want, it's not really even that close, not a candidate. Herb Jones, from a scoring and usage perspective, this is the only player in this group to start more than 80% of the games that he played in last season. And he played nearly 30 minutes a game, but only scored 9.8 points per game. So less than 10 points a game in 30 minutes. That means his usage is among the lowest of this group of breakout candidates at 14.5% and only 9 field goal attempts per 36. Assists, turnovers, rebounds, not a great rebounder, somewhat high turnover rate, nothing to note or nothing that stands out or noteworthy in the assist department either. Scoring profile wise, despite being thought of as a 3-and-D player, he actually takes over 60% of his shots from the paint and a third of his shots from three. Again, another player kind of like Josh Green who never takes like those mid-rangers, right? The only player in this group with the free throw rate higher than the historical group, that's great. Self-creation though, basically the lowest of all of these guys, again, right in line with Josh Green without the Luka creates everything excuse. Efficiency wise, only 54% from two, 33.5% from three, 57% true shooting. Now, what's interesting is that these are all exactly the same as the historical group in the year before their breakouts, but scoring efficiency is the one area that I expect these guys this year, you know, or more recent guys to be better than their historical counterparts, given that, you know, Kawhi or Paul George or Giannis in their second or third season, you know, 7, 8, 10 years ago, the game was just different and all players and all teams are more efficient now than they were then. Or at least not all players, but almost all players. Definitely the league as a whole. Maybe Herb Jones, but the usage is just too low. The efficiency isn't good enough to make up for it. I do like the free throw rate, but similar to Denny Avdia, I'm out for pretty much the same reasons. Jonathan Kuminga, scoring and usage-wise, 10 points per game in only 21 minutes a game on almost 20% usage. So he's really the first player we've talked about with usage in line with his historical counterparts. His assist rate is actually decent at 13%. Turnovers are pretty high, 15% turnover rate. And both of his assists and turnovers and turnover rates and assist rates are trending up from the year before. Ideally, you'd see increased usage, but adapting and reducing turnovers is something I saw often in the lead up to a breakout among the historical guys. I just kind of chalk this up as to those guys getting a better feel for the game. And I don't know if Kuminga's there yet. He was thought of as being extremely raw, but with a lot of potential. Would like to see those turnovers come down. That would really help me feel a lot better about it. But, you know, rebound rate, it's not terrible, but it's not as high as I would have expected for a guy who plays a lot of four on his team. Scoring profile-wise, like Herb Jones, over 60% of his shots in the paint, about 30% from three. Free throw rate, though, is very strong. 28% free throw rate in line with this historical group. Self-creation is a little low. It's not so low that it's a major concern for me. Efficiency-wise, 59% from two, that's good. 37% from three, that's good. 60% true shooting, all of that solid, better than the historical counterparts. So to wrap up Kuminga, he's the first player in this group that I consider to be a strong candidate for a breakout. Patrick Williams. Scoring and usage, 28 minutes per game, only 10 points per game. That's basically Herb Jones levels. Slightly below desired usage for this analysis, and it's probably far below the desired usage for Bulls fans. Assists, turnovers, rebounds. He and Rui, who's next, have the lowest assist rate in this entire group by a long shot. His assist rate was less than 6%. His rebound rate was also low at only 8%. From a scoring profile perspective, only 37% of his shots came in the paint. That's the lowest in this group, but only 41% of his shots came from three. That's actually a decent number as far as the right mix of getting up enough threes, but not being only a catch and shoot 3-point guy. But his self-creation is pretty low. It's not far off what's expected for this group, but it's a little low. Free throw rate, though, is by far the lowest in this group, only 15% free throw rate. And it's interesting because he has the lowest 2-point percentage in this group at just under 50%, and that's field goal make percentage. So of all of his 2-point shots, He makes less than half of them, which is low. That is not good. And he has the highest three-point percentage of this group at 41.5%, or at least did last year. That leads to a true shooting percentage of 57.6%. The true shooting is fine. So anyway, to wrap him up, it should come as no surprise to Bulls fans that his aggression seems to be the biggest issue. His two-point percentage is super low, but he takes 60% of his shots from the paint. So he's not finishing well. And a third of those, takes 60% of his shots from two, a third of those are mid-range to long two. So he doesn't really even get into the paint like you'd want. And because of that, just doesn't get to the line really either. I have been a Patrick Williams believer, or at least I was hopeful for him from a distance for a while. And I think I've got to say now, he's not a strong candidate for a breakout this year. To wrap up this group, Rui Hachimura, 11 points per game in 23 minutes. His 14 field goal attempts per 36 and 20% usage are the highest of this candidate group. And along with Jonathan Kuminga, is the only guy really in range with that historical comparison group that we're looking at. Assists, turnovers, rebounds, just like Patrick Williams, extremely low assist. Unlike Patrick Williams, also Rui does a good job taking care of the ball, has a low turnover rate and a fairly decent rebound rate. 30% of his shots are mid-range and long twos. That's the most of this group by a lot. 42% of his attempts are from the paint, only 27% from three. His twos are often self-created. In the guard section, I talk a lot about off the dribble. You know, normally that means off the dribble, in especially with wings, but even with guards too. I think it probably relates more to isolation, you know, mid-rangers, which is what I see a lot of with Rui when I watch him. And because of that, his free throw rate is kind of low. I think that's due to a lot of jumpers. You know, when you're not getting to the basket, you're not going to draw a ton of free throws. He's below average from three at only 32%. Not amazing from two, 55%. It's not below 50% like Pat Will, but not great. And it all kind of leads to a barely above Denny Avdija level true shooting of 55.6. So he was actually the first guy. It's funny, when I was thinking of this analysis a while back, way back during the playoffs last season, he's the first guy I thought of when I was putting it together as a possible like Lauri Markkanen analog. This was during the playoffs where, and if you remember, Rui actually kind of had a moment in the playoffs. He was a little later into his career than the other guys I've talked about today. It seemed like maybe the light switch flipped on, but overall, beyond those couple of weeks in the playoffs for the Lakers, I find it hard to be excited about him as a breakout candidate. I think he's got more of a shot than maybe some of these other guys, but I'd say he's an average candidate at best, probably below average in terms of likelihood to take that next step. So to wrap up this group, Kuminga, it's Kuminga and then everyone else. Like, while the Warriors may be disappointed or in his development, or feel it's not coming along fast enough, or maybe they're not. I don't know. But he's actually kind of meeting all the historical markers to take that next step. The downside is a lot of people had really high expectations for him. I remember looking at his card prices a while ago, and he was near the top of his draft class despite hardly playing his rookie year. And he's still way below his ideal peak in terms of career impact and skill set. The progress that he's making, though, while maybe slower than desired, looks to me like it's all headed in the right direction. So while he might be a little disappointing overall with this group, though, it's a little disappointing with this. There's a lot of really good names in that historical group, and to not find more than one player that I was interested in was a little disappointing, but this next group should be interesting as well. Now we're going to talk about guys who are starters or were starters last year at that starter level, right? So that's 14, roughly 14 to 19 points per game, starting most of their games, playing a lot of minutes, etc., and who could make that leap to the group that I've termed a leader, or even that all-star level, which is, you know, 19 all the way up to, you know, more than 24 or so points a game. Historically speaking, again, there's some big names here. Paul George took the step from starter to leader in his fourth season. DeMar DeRozan did it in his fifth. Kawhi did it in his fifth. And Giannis did it in his fourth. Jason Tatum took the leap from starter to all-star in his third season. Mikal Bridges, now I cheated a little bit here because I only looked at last season's Brooklyn numbers, but he made that leap in terms of impact in his fifth season. And the poster boy for this analysis, Lauri Markkanen, he made that leap from starter to all-star from his fifth to his sixth season. So that's seven players, four moved one level up, three moved two levels up. And interestingly, in this group, there's actually some very stark differences in the stats the year before their breakout or next level jump between the four guys who went from this starter level to this leader level and the three guys who went from this starter level to this all-star kind of level. On the whole, they averaged about 16 points per game and before their progression on 34 minutes per game. And all of them started basically 100% of their games. The guys who went up one level, that's Paul George, Kawhi, DeMar DeRozan, and Giannis, actually had more usage, more assists, higher turnovers, more self-creation, and worse efficiency than the guys who moved up two levels to that all-star level. I think that indicates just that that this particular group of guys, even though they are and were wings, at least were then considered wings, they were doing a lot more with the ball the year before they took that leap. Whereas the other guys maybe were doing relied on less to create offense for their team. So those guys who went from 15 to 24 or so, as again, Laurie, Tatum, Bridges, they actually had lower usage in that year before. They shot more threes, they created less for themselves, and they scored more efficiently than that other group who only took that one level up. And yes, again, including Mikal Bridges, 30 or so games in Brooklyn, it's a little cheap. Looking at each player's numbers in this group, though, he, Markkanen, and Tatum actually had very, very similar numbers across the board the year before they took that next step. So a few things are true of all of these guys, though, all seven of them. From 2 years before their breakout to the year before their breakout, all increased their usage, decreased their turnovers, and started creating more for themselves. None significantly improved their efficiency. This is just echoing some of the things that I said last time and that I'm kind of learning about. You know, I really thought if a huge increase in efficiency was going to be a primary driver for a breakout. While it's important, it's not unimportant, especially, you know, when you're really getting up and to that all-star level, it's a little less important than I expected it to be. Now you can't just be totally inefficient. That doesn't work, but you don't have to have some major jump to have a breakout. So I'm evaluating four guys in this category, which maybe really should only be three. RJ Barrett, Scottie Barnes, Franz Wagner, and Jaden McDaniels. So McDaniels, he really didn't get to that loosely applied 14 points per game line that I'm saying a starter is or needs to have. But he did start 100% of their games and was somewhat close to that 14 level, 12, a little over 12 points per game. Anyway, I recognize that he may be is more appropriately compared to the group that I went through before this. With that said, he had more minutes per games, started more of the games that he played in, and even his 12 points per game is higher than every single player in the previous group that I talked about. So he's a little bit of a tweener. I'm leaving him here in this group, and let's talk about him now. So you may have noticed, I'm not including any kind of defensive measures at all. So when we talk about breakout, you know, there's more to it than this, I guess is what is the best way to say it. There's more to it than this. I'm not saying that this is 100% of everything. This is what defines a breakout. But in terms of offensive output, this is the way I'm analyzing it. And that's important for Jaden McDaniels because clearly he's the best defender in this group that we're talking about now. And his defense is easily the bigger part of his on-court value. Let's be honest, though, if he scores 14 points a game and is one of the best defenders in the league, he's not really going to become hobby relevant from a card perspective. And that's kind of the backdrop of all of this. I mean, I haven't even looked at the cards yet, but you know, I just want to see, is there anyone that maybe we're sleeping on that I could look at from a card perspective and kind of prospect on, not because it's a great investment strategy, but because it's fun. So anyway, let's take a look at Jaden McDaniels' offense. Scoring and usage, his scoring is the lowest. I already talked about that. 12 points a game. His usage is also the lowest of all the other players that are in this group that I'm comparing, both current and historical. Extremely low assists, fairly high turnovers, and surprisingly to me, not an amazing rebounder or even a good one. The twin big system in Minnesota may have something to do with that. I don't know. Scoring profile wise, 50% of his attempts come from the paint, 40% of his attempts come from three. It's pretty decent distribution. Self-creation is very low and low free throw rate also. Strong efficiency, 59% from two, 40% from three, 61% true shooting. That's all great. So literally all of his scoring profile stuff, shot location, efficiency, self-creation, free throw rate, is nearly perfectly in line with Lauri Markkanen in his Cleveland year. Much closer to that group that moved up to the all-star level. So it's really more in line with that group that made that two-level jump. So I don't want to totally discount him, but there are some major differences between his season last year, his situation this year, and Laurie's season in Cleveland and Laurie's season in Utah. First, Laurie came into a much more opportunity in Utah. Even Mikal Bridges had a huge workload after the trade to Brooklyn, and Tatum in the year of his breakout, which is those three are the group that went to that all-star level. The year before, he had Kyrie and Terry Rozier on the roster. The year that he went from 16 to 24 points a game, those guys weren't there. I don't see that kind of opportunity coming for Jaden McDaniels on this team. Improvement, probably. Enough to be considered a candidate for a huge leap offensively? I don't think so. RJ Barrett, scoring and usage, 19.6 points per game. That's right in line with that starter leader line. I just had a hard time putting him in that leader group. So I have him grouped in this group as the third leading scorer on his team, and actually decreased his scoring output from the year before. So it was really hard for me to group him in the leader group, especially when he's kind of right on the line. So I have him in the starter group. His usage is very high for this group, 26% usage on 17 field goal attempts per 36 minutes. Both of these are higher than the historical group and more in line, but more in line with the group, that subgroup, the four players that went from starter to leader. Unlike that historical group, his assist rate is low. Turnovers were fine, but his assist rate was low. 59% of his attempts came from the paint. 33% came from three. Again, far more similar with that leader group level, or the group, the historical group that moved from starter to leader. His self-created twos were pretty strong, the highest of any breakout candidate I've talked about so far, so at any level up to now, and at nearly 60%. So nearly 60% of his two-point makes were he created himself or were in ISO or off the dribble. But the off-the-dribble three-point rate, attempt rate, the rate of three-pointers made that were not assisted is very low. His catch and so basically his catch and shoot from three, or catch and drive, or ISO from two. That's more similar to that group that went from starter to leader historically. Efficiency wise, not great or even bad. 49.5% from two. Pretty objectively, that's bad. It's not a high percentage, especially considering 60% of his shots come from the painted area. Only 31% field goal percentage from three. Obviously, that's also not good. So we can't totally dismiss him because he's a lot like the group that moved from starter to leader historically. And those are some really good players, right? And guys that went on to improve even beyond that. His numbers last season are actually extremely similar to DeMar DeRozan's the season before he jumped from 18 to 22 points per game. I think that kind of improvement is definitely possible. But like DeMar, it's kind of hard to see him ever being a top tier all-star, maybe, but at that kind of top tier, you know, best player in a championship team level, or even all-star or all-NBA level. It's really hard to see Barrett getting there, especially this year. So, you know, they have different athletic profiles. I'm not saying they're the same, but statistically their profiles are pretty similar, at least in the seasons I'm comparing. But I do think a DeMar DeRozan kind of career is maybe a possibility for RJ Barrett. He's a decent candidate for improvement, but I'm not super excited for it. Scotty Barnes, his scoring and usage at 15 points, he scored 15 points a game in 34 minutes per game on 20% usage. So all of this is very similar to that group that went from starter all the way to all-star. His assist to turnover rate, his assists were high. His turnovers were also a little high, but his assist rate was, I think, is a 20%, which is basically the highest in this group. His rebound rate was actually right in line with these historical guys too. 60% of his attempts come in the paint, but only 22% from three. That's pretty low, by far the lowest among the 2023 breakout candidates that we're talking about now. And it's similar to that starter to leader historical group, although that group is kind of weighed down by Giannis's extremely low 10% attempt rate the year before one of his breakouts. Scotty Barnes' self-creation, pretty good shape. Free throw rate, it's not bad, 24%. It's below his counterparts and the historical, most of his counterparts and the historical comparison group. Efficiency-wise, he was very poor last year. 28% from three, 51% from two. Again, with his volume of shots in the lane, 51% is not great. 52% true shooting, that's pretty bad. So looking at last season and the growth from the season before that to last, I'd say he's a little bit of an enigma. The only real issue is his shooting percentages, but you know, even this historical group doesn't have super high percentages. A lot of those seasons were, you know, 5+ years ago, which has something to do with it. But it's not like those guys were lighting the world on fire from an efficiency perspective. So his profile is actually pretty similar to what I think is maybe actually a pretty apt comparison in Paul George. Nearly everything is very similar, except that even back then, Paul George was getting up more threes and shooting them better. But everything else from his usage rate to assist rate and self-creation is extremely similar. So I think he's a good candidate to take the next step. It's highly dependent, though, on shooting the ball better. Now, Franz Wagner scored 19 points in 33 minutes per game last year on 24% usage. All of this lines up really nicely with that historical group. He had a good assist rate at 17%, an acceptable turnover rate at just under 12%. That's a little concerning considering that that increased actually last year from the season before, and almost all breakout players historically decreased their turnover rate year over year, especially in that year leading up to the breakout. And his rebound rate is a little bit low. Again, I'm not putting a lot of weight into rebound rate, especially for wings. And his scoring profile is pretty nice. 58% of his shots in the paint, a third of them from three. It's actually very similar to RJ Barrett's shot distribution. His self-creation is strong. Over 50% of his twos came on drives or ISOs or were unassisted. And 20% of his threes came off the dribble as well. That 20% pull-up three-point number is far higher than anyone else we've talked about so far in this podcast, in this episode. His free throw rate is also very strong, perfectly in line with his historical group. Efficiency, strong. 54% from two, that's fine. 36% from three, that's fine. 59% true shooting, that's also fine. But in totality, and compared especially against this historical group, which includes champions and MVPs and finals MVPs, it's really strong. So among this contemporary group of players, Franz, by far the best statistical profile to take that leap to maybe even like that all-star type level. That team, though, has a lot of young players they're looking to develop. He definitely seems to have maybe even the highest floor among those young guys on the Magic. I don't know if he has the highest ceiling or not. I mean, I think most people will tell you that's Paolo, and that's probably true. If more opportunity comes his way or he takes on more of a leadership role, and more of a scoring role on that team, I think he is a strong candidate for a significant leap even this season. So after Franz, I like Scotty. He's got a lot of positives and one major negative. And it's actually pretty similar to RJ Barrett's major negative, which was shooting efficiency. They were just bad last year from an efficiency perspective. And even a marginal improvement there can go a long way for those guys. I mean, making two or three percent more of their shots can lead to multiple points per game, especially if they continue to up their usage even a little. So I do think there's some hope. And, you know, I think I haven't looked at the numbers this year so far for these guys, but I'm pretty sure all of them, especially RJ Barrett and Scotty Barnes, have had strong starts to the season. Now, our final group, I guess we can't really call it a group. We've got one player that I'm going to analyze here, but our final group is those who were already scoring at what I've deemed as like this leader level, right? It's roughly 19 to 24 points a game, and moved to, at least historically, moved from that level to this all-star, all-NBA level, basically, you know, up above 24, even up to 25, 26 or more points per game. As you might imagine, the sample sizes get smaller here. But I do have three historical players that fit this bill. So Giannis, he went from 23 to 27 points per game from his fourth to his fifth season. Jaylen Brown went from 20 to 24 from his fourth to his fifth season. And Kawhi went from 21 to 25 points per game from his fifth to his sixth season. So in the season before their leap, that leap to that 24 and above level, and I call it a leap because, again, you know, we're talking about 4 or 5 points per game progression, not just, you know, one or two or kind of trickling into it. But, you know, moving from 20 to 24 points per game, like I said, it's the same example I used earlier. It's 20% improvement. I think that's quite a bit. That's at least enough to consider a level up, right? Which is what I'm trying to get at. So this group, in the year before, they scored 21.5 points per game on average in 34 minutes per game on 26% usage, 16% assist rate, 11% turnover rates. Half of their shots came from the paint. A quarter of their shots came from three. So this is really the first time we have a group that is actually moving kind of out of the paint and away from the three-point line. And I think there's actually basketball reasons for it, not because those are like super efficient shots, but because when you're asked to go, except for someone like SGA, who can get in the paint seemingly anytime he wants, when you're just given the ball and said, go make something, it's sometimes difficult to get all the way to the rim. So I think this actually makes sense, especially for these upper level guys. Now, this group scored more than half of their twos from drives or ISOs or unassisted, which again kind of bolsters the point I was just making about taking more mid-rangers and stuff. And about 20% of their threes came off the dribble. So again, that for especially for this wing group, that's pretty high. They also got to the free throw line at a really high rate, over 35%, but by far the higher than anyone or any season that we've looked at so far in today's podcast. Despite the high usage, they scored pretty efficiently at 55% from two, 36% from three, and 60% true shooting. I only have one player in this group to compare against that's a possible candidate from that level to that next level, and that's Keldon Johnson. Last season, Keldon Johnson scored 22 points on 33 minutes per game in 33 minutes per game on 28% usage. That's pretty well in line with this historical group. 14% assist rate, 10% turnover rate, also pretty well in line. A little light on the assists, definitely low on his rebounds at only 8% rebound rate. Again, you know, I'm not really counting rebounds. I'm not really counting it against him too much or even at all. I just think it's worth noting. 54% of his shots came from the paint, 37% came from three. Compared to this historical group, a little higher rate of his shots are threes. But I think that paint number is probably more important than the three-point number. If guys are taking less long twos and more threes, that's probably a good thing. But if they're not getting into the paint at all, I kind of view that as a bad thing. He was assisted on 50% of his shots from two and 90% of his threes. So both of these, in terms of self-creation, are a little lower than the historical group. Though his 30% free throw rate, while also lower than the historical group, is pretty good and higher than all the other players we've talked about so far in the wing portion of today's podcast. He shot 52% from two, which is not great, and 33% from three, that's also not great. That's the biggest difference from that Jaylen Brown, Kawhi, Giannis group, when they were all scoring at a similar level, that 19 to 22, 23 points per game before they had a leap to that next level, all of them got to the line better and scored more efficiently than Keldon did last year. So I said last episode that efficiency was less important in terms of taking the next step than I expected it to be, but I also said that that's especially true at lower levels. So moving from bench to rotation and rotation to starter and starter to leader and so on. At the upper levels, for the guys who already have high usage and are near that kind of all-star and above level, efficiency holds more weight. And this is Keldon's big miss. So reasonable minds may differ on what the Wimby effect will do for him this year. Maybe having a better team with a better defense will promote better offense, more transition stuff, you know, better percentages in that way. Or maybe Wimby kind of takes up more of Keldon's opportunity and his output last season was more a function of just the team not having that go-to scorer or whatever. I don't know. People will come down on different sides of that for sure. Personally, I don't see him as likely to take that all-star leap. So to wrap this up, I went through 17 players that I had classified as wings, or actually with the help of John and Nathaniel classified as wings, and compared them to similar seasons of players in the year before they took a leap to that next level. Of that group, I like Jaylen Johnson to move from that bench role to having more of that starter level of impact with the potential to continue to improve beyond. I do think that he's got some potential that's been untapped and we might be starting to see it now. The largest group was a group of eight guys who were in a rotation level role. And again, that's the way I define rotation or rotation adjacent role. Last year, and unfortunately and disappointingly, of that group, there's really only one that I liked as a strong candidate to break out to that next level, and that's Jonathan Kuminga. And I actually wonder too if even he's got a cap on him just because of that team and the way they play and what they're expecting to do and so on, and the way that they've used him historically. Not a lot has changed for that team. I mean, I guess Jordan Poole and Chris Paul, that's a major change. I don't know if that is going to have a huge impact on Kuminga's ability to get more opportunity. But if he does, I think he's a really good candidate to kind of take the next level based on where he was. There were four guys that I looked at that were already in that starter level role and impacting their team's offense night in and night out. Of those, Franz Wagner was head and shoulders above the rest in terms of his statistical profile. But Scotty Barnes and RJ Barrett, while each missing a key ingredient, a very important key ingredient, efficiency, actually both fared better than I expected them to. And I think they're worth mentioning. You know, I would say keep an eye on them, or I'm going to keep an eye on them. Neither one of them personally are like that intriguing or appealing to me, but at least, you know, if I'm being thorough with the data, I think they're worth mentioning that they weren't total busts, although their flaw is a big one, and that is they were extremely inefficient last season. I also considered Keldon Johnson, who was at a level beyond all of these guys that we've talked about, at least in terms of scoring outcomes last season. There's less data to go on there, right? I don't have a bunch of other people in his other contemporaries of his that I'm comparing against, and I don't have as many historical seasons that I'm comparing against. But I don't see him as a strong candidate to significantly improve upon last season's output. So, given that I'm late on this analysis that I was hoping to complete before the season started, I was actually hoping to wrap up bigs today, but like always, I've gone on probably too long. And I'll stop here and get the bigs analysis out soon. But we'll be evaluating some interesting guys there too, like Evan Mobley, Alperen Şengün, Jaren Jackson Jr., and more. So that's it. The wings, a little disappointing. I thought there's not as many that I'm super excited about, or really even any that I'm super excited about. Franz is nice. Kuminga is nice. I think Jalen Johnson has a chance. But beyond that, there's not a lot that I was a little disappointing. Thank you very much. We'll wrap here and we'll talk again soon. Y'all have a great day.